Welcome to the Real Talk Real Estate Podcast with hosts Aleem Savani and Brandon Daniel.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Real Talk Real Estate.
In today's episode, I'm very thrilled to introduce our next guest. She is not only a pre-construction specialist, she is an animal advocate. She is a driving force, the CEO and the founder of My Condo Source. Please welcome Sahara Mahmood.
Thanks, guys, for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. So we're very excited to have you on our show today. Can you please start by touching on your journey into real estate?
Yeah, for sure. So in 2008, I graduated from the Schulich School of Business with a degree in finance. I don't know if you guys remember, but in 2008, that was literally in the midst of the financial crisis. Yeah. And I could not get a job to save my life. I tried for a year. I was really dwindling. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. But in hindsight, it turned out to be the best thing that could have happened to me, because what I realized at that time, after 2 years of like what I felt at that time that I was wasting, you know, a lot of precious months, was that I realized I didn't actually want to be an employee. I wanted to be an entrepreneur so that I could actually control my own success and my own journey versus a company where I have to like climb up the corporate ladder and wait to be promoted and so forth. So the ironic thing is that my decision wasn't with the mindset that I want to go into real estate. I was just committed that I want to be successful, and real estate just turned out to be the avenue that enabled me to get there. Because entrepreneurship is essentially, you know, it's a series of challenges. You're going to succeed, you're going to fail, you're going to have a lot of failures along the way. But what I realized is if I can take those failures and ball them into energy that can fuel me forward towards success, then that's the right path to be on. And I kind of use that same passion towards everything that I'm interested in. So animals, like you mentioned, my fitness, my work.
Yeah, then you started real estate and then you started My Condo Source. So how did that come about? Like, what was the journey?
So My Condo Source actually started about 4 years after I started real estate. So when I first got my license, if you want me to speak on that, it was 2012. I joined a brokerage. I went into the office and I'm like, here we go. I'm a realtor. And I had a meeting with my broker and I was like, oh, you know, I was driving here and I saw like eight people with billboards outside saying they're number one. Like, how do I become number one? And what he said to me was like, oh, so do you have family that can refer you business? And I was like, no, I'm an immigrant. They all live overseas. No family here. And then he said, do you have a big database? And I said, I was an international student. A lot of my friends were international students. Now they've all gone back home. So I know maybe like 12 people here. And then he said, do you have money to advertise? And I said, no, I'm actually about $80,000 in debt. So no money to advertise. And he basically said, you're going to go out there and meet five new people a day to add to your database who are going to eventually, hopefully, want to transact in real estate. So I figured to myself, where do I meet five new people? So I ended up looking on this high-end sophisticated website called Craigslist. And I started posting ads there for real estate. And that's how my journey started. So my first year in real estate, I was actually only doing rentals. So I would post other people's listings that would come up on MLS, put ads up on Kijiji and Craigslist, and hold open houses every single night for rentals. And the great part of that journey was not only was it a hot rental market, so I was getting usually a deal every night, but I was adding 15 to 20 people to my database every single evening, because at the open house, all these people would come in there because it was a hot rental market. So I made my time super efficient and I realized that this is a way that I can scale my business. And at the end of the first year, I did 120 rentals. Now, the next year, I was like, you know, I only made $100,000, but I had this incredible work ethic that I had now instilled in myself and I had this incredible process. So I was like, how can I take that and transcend into something different? So one of the days I called up, you know, one of the agents that I saw on MLS, I said, how do you have so many listings in the same building? Because I was on MLS every single morning looking for listings. And this guy had like 20 listings in the same building. And I said to myself, how is that even possible that, you know, five landlords on the same floor? And he's like, oh, because I sell pre-construction. Oh. And I said, what's pre-construction? And he said, it's selling the building before it's built. And that was my first introduction to what it was. He kind of explained what it was. And the next year, I decided that I'm going to delve fully forward into pre-construction. And I changed the course of my business. And I ended up doing 100 sales.
Wow. Oh, wow. What made you change to pre-construction?
Exactly what I was telling you. Yeah. So when I saw him doing those rentals and he introduced it to me, he basically said, well, you know, I was very new to it. I didn't know what it was. But what he said to me was like, this is what you're going to tell the people on the phone. Because keep in mind, I now had a database of 2,500 people from that year.
Yeah.
And granted that they were rental leads, you have to be cognizant of the fact that a lot of these people had a lot of money. They were new to the country. They were just like, they don't know where they want to live. And that's why they're renting, not because they're poor. There was a lot of execs who were, you know, from New York or other cities, and they're just here for a year. They're not going to buy a place for a year. They're going to rent. But they still had money. So I was calling all of them, and I invited them to this real estate event that he was hosting on the weekend. And what he'd said to me was like, if you just bring them, I'll help you close them. So that's what I did. You know, appointment by appointment. At the end of the day, I had 7 sales on my first day of pre-construction.
Oh, wow.
Because he helped me. Yeah. So what happened was I watched him through the process. I started learning very fast. And, you know, I was, even though I was splitting my commission with him 50-50, like 100% of zero is zero and 50% of deals is great.
It's great.
And more than that, I learned very fast on what to do myself. And, you know, within a week, I was able to do appointments on my own.
Oh, wow.
So it was like the best education.
The best thing, yeah.
And I started to do the same thing again, which was posting pre-construction on now on Kijiji and Craigslist. And people have this misconception, at least at that time, I haven't done it in a long time, but at that time, it worked very well for me. And there's people calling me now instead of rentals on pre-construction. I was like, wow, there's sales, there's buyers out there in the internet world. And that's how I got started.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's like all like, within like a week from start till generating that. Yeah.
It really was. It was a very fast process for me. And then what I ended up doing was I started to specialize in a certain neighborhood. So because this project that I had met this gentleman at was at Yonge and Eglinton, and I learned that through him, I'd kind of become an area expert on that because I was watching so many appointments. What I realized is like these people are experts. They know traffic counts. They know, you know, population growth of that neighborhood. They know the rental rates, all the statistics of sales and so forth. So I dialed down on that neighborhood, and then I spent that whole year only selling projects that were coming up in that area. So I wasn't like, oh, selling a project in Vaughan and then trying to figure out Brampton and then trying to figure out Scarborough. I became an area expert and I stayed there. So I was really able to capitalize on everything I learned and like become a category killer in Yonge and Eglinton.
Oh, wow. Now you do everywhere, right? You're like,
now I have a team, so we have the capability to do it everywhere. But back then, I was a solo agent. So the first year, I did 100 sales. The next year, I doubled. I did 200 sales, 200, 200. And then that was kind of like my cap. So I realized that I can do more than 200 sales a year on my own. And that's when I thought about expanding and having a team. And I also wanted... not everybody, I didn't want to call it like the Sahara Memo team because then everyone's going to call and they want to ask for me.
Yes.
So a lot of realtors name their teams after themselves. For me personally, like, listen, different things work for everybody, but I wanted it to have a brand that can last past me. So, you know, if somebody says the associate condo source, they're not like looking for Sahara. They're looking for the access and the expertise.
Yeah.
And that way I can hire agents under me who get the same level of respect and like the clients still want to work with them. And it became very organic. I had 4 friends at Royal LePage at that time, and they were like, oh, you're doing great in pre-con, and we want to join the bandwagon. And we kind of just formulated a team from there, and that's how it got started. It was pretty organic.
Oh, that's amazing. That's good.
And then from there, we went to 400 deals a year, because now I had 4 people. So we were able to scale very, very fast.
You guys do what? Close to 600-plus deals?
No, we do anywhere from, like now it's a down market, so we're doing anywhere from 300 to 450 deals a year, depending on the year.
Yeah, that's still really good,
Any ups and downs of having a team?
Definitely. I mean, listen, every business is going to have ups and downs, but I think like the most important thing is to realize that there's going to be challenges and how can I get past them. I would say the biggest, you know, thing that the team members started thinking is like, oh, we can be her. What does she have that we don't have? And let's like become a leader ourselves. But everybody wants to get, and 2 of them left and started their own team, which is fine as well, because we had great success for 2 years. And then they said, let's go be a team leader. And, you know, what they don't realize is being the leader is actually very, very tough. You know, everybody wants to be the CEO till they get punched in the face, because your job as the CEO and as the leader of a team is handling problems all day long. Whatever somebody else can do, they're coming to you. Hey, can you fix this, boss? And that's essentially your role,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, they think they can do it, but then they get into it and it turns out to be tough. And then they go on to become solo agents again. So not everybody's really cut out for starting a team. It's a very tough gig. And you have to be very, very resilient. So, you know, I think the biggest part of my success was basically I understand that there's going to be a lot of failure involved and I'm okay with it and I embrace it. So you have to be able to look past the failures and how can I keep rolling forward? I don't think about dead deals. I think about the deals that went through, not the deals that didn't go through. And, you know, if you have the right systems, technology, people in place and the processes, you know, we haven't really had a bad year so far.
No, it doesn't seem like it. I think that the way your mentality is the right mentality, too. Don't look at the failures, you know, move on to the next one.
Yeah, you really got to just shut out the noise. Like, focus on the things that you can control, not on the things you can't control. You can't control politics. You can't control interest rates. You can't control buyers are going to pull out of deals. And, you know, people who say, oh, I don't want to work with you anymore. And they won't even tell you why. But what I can control is the fact that I can get up every single day and I can go after new business and I can control my own destiny, find new clients and so forth.
No.
So how do you go about building relationships with builders and developers?
So in the beginning, what I did was I was working leftover inventory. Well, other than that first platinum launch that I did with that other broker, I'd latched onto him to get the access because builders don't work with just everybody. They work with the people that they've had success with in the past. So they'd rather work with 20 people who'll do 15, 20 deals each to sell out the building than 400 individual agents because administratively it's very tough for them and it's very time consuming. So that is the reason that they use the platinum agents. So in that first project, because it was a new launch and I didn't have access at that time, I used my access through this gentleman. But for the next project that I chose leftover inventory, which basically means that the platinums have already sold what they had to. They have like about a 2-week window and then it becomes a hot list, which is open to everybody. So I was literally taking people in one at a time, appointment after appointment. And I was still new at that time. And what I started to do was really utilize the in-house sales team, which was great there. They knew the project inside out. So if I had questions about like floor premiums or view obstructions and things like that, they were able to help me. And then I ended up doing 28 sales at that building. So what ends up happening is when the builder sees, oh my God, this person came and did 28 sales, because everybody can do 2 or 3 units in a building. You don't stand out. You have to, my recommendation is stay at one site and really kill it there and make a name for yourself with that developer. And then other people start hearing like, who's this girl who sold 28 units at a building? Because it's a lot more powerful than saying, oh, I sold one unit here and one unit there and one unit there. I was like, yeah, I went and sold 28 units at this. And then other developers start calling me like, hey, we heard you did 28 sales at this project at Yonge and Eglinton. Do you want to come take a look at our project? So that's what started happening. So then I had 2 other buildings that I was working on that year at Yonge and Eglinton. Like I said, I did 59 sales at that building. So I started building myself by A, becoming the area specialist in that neighborhood, and then B, like doing high volume sales and less projects.
No, which is the right way to go about it too.
Yeah.
Because like there are people I know too who's like, oh, I did like 5 sales of pre-construction.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's all over.
Yeah.
Right. You're not going to, and they wonder,
you're not going to be able to build a name for yourself like that.
And then they wonder, well, how come I don't get the platinum access? Because that still goes on now, right? Like right now, I'll get the leftovers.
Right.
And people like you who do volume and put the work into it will get first dibs.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I did a lot was I would work from the sales office and people saw that I was hustling super hard. And, you know, at that building at Yonge and Eglinton, it was called the Art Shop at the time. A lot of times they would just, you know, they would literally see me sitting there all day making my calls from there. And that way, 2 things happen. One, if one of my leads said, oh, I can come right now. I'm not like, oh, I'm in Brampton. I need to get ready. And then I got to arrive in rush hour and I can't be there for 4 hours. You know, I'm already there. I'm like, come on by. Yeah. So I got a lot of appointments that way because I was already working from there like it's my office. It worked really well for me. I would do that every single weekend. And also the sales team there, if they were busy, they would hand me a walk-in client. I did a bunch of deals from walk-in clients. And it's not about being there one day. I was there every single day. So there's no such thing as luck. I wasn't lucky. I was just there all the time.
Yeah, you're putting the work
into it. It's not like I went there one Saturday and they handed me 2 people.
Yeah. They only handed you the two people because you were there.
They saw me. They were like, she's doing a lot of sales. Yeah. She's working really hard. Even the days where I didn't have someone showed up, you know, they were like, okay, here's a lead. And a lead is not necessarily going to buy. Most likely they're not going to buy, actually. But, you know, it just so happened, like, my conversation was good and I got lucky, so to speak. And they bought two units.
Yeah.
So things like that started happening.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now how many agents do you have?
Just four. We're still
in there. Oh, you still have four?
And myself.
And
so five with myself. Oh. It's still a small team. We're always looking to expand. But what I find is, like, it has to be the right fit and it has to be the right agents, because everybody comes up to me and says, oh, I want to make $1 million a year. And then I'm like, okay, sure. And then they get into it and then they realize how much work it actually takes to get there. And then they fall off the bandwagon because it all looks very glamorous on social media, but what they don't realize is, like, the daily grind is very monotonous and it's very long and it's taxing on your body and your mind, and you have to be ready for it. So it's not for everybody. Everybody wants the result, but what you have to understand is that you have to love the process and you have to be very detached from the outcome. So a lot of agents start and they'll say, oh, we made 100 calls like for 1 week, then it dwindles to 60 calls, then it dwindles to 20 calls. Next thing you know, they're calling three times a week and maybe like 15 people, you know? So it keeps going down because they don't see the results and they get demotivated. I think one thing that I did really well when I first started was I kept calling my database consistently and I was detached from the results. It was about the process and I embraced the process.
Yes.
That eventually led to success.
Yeah, and the consistency.
The consistency is key.
Yeah.
If you can say anything about me and how I did it, it was like I literally woke up and I did the exact same thing every single day. So when I was, you know, on myself and I had no team and I had no responsibilities of other people and staff and so forth, I had the same exact schedule every single day. So 8 o'clock in the morning, I was posting ads. And this starts from my rental business too, by the way. Every single morning, I was posting ads on Kijiji, Craigslist. During the day, I'm taking in like phone calls and booking people. I wouldn't leave my house till 5 o'clock because that was my open house time, and another one from 7 to 8. So I made it very efficient. I wasn't like running around at one, and I was able to keep my schedule very consistent. Now that I have a team, my schedule is not as consistent. But what is consistent is the level of discipline that I have in terms of the fact that I know I'm going to be working every single day. Maybe the tasks change here and there. I have a lot more social obligations now because there's a lot of builder trips that I've been going on. So, you know, when you're a top producer, you get invited to these travel trips. Like I'm going next week to South Africa, for example. Then after that, I'm going to Denmark. I'm going to England. So I have to like figure out my schedule and like put all those trips in, all the builder dinners we have, the presentations, the launch events and so forth. So my day is not as regimented as it was as a solo agent. But what I do know is that I'm working pretty much 24 hours a day, and just the activities day to day change depending on what's happening, especially when the team's like, oh, now we have this problem. It needs to be solved by 12 o'clock, or this buyer wants to pull out of this deal and he wants to talk now, you know? So your schedule changes depending on what's going on.
How do you stay motivated from the beginning and keep that consistent? Because like a lot of people will fall off the train.
Yeah, I think that for me, it's like I was saying, I've actually embraced the pressure. And, you know, people think of pressure and stress as a negative thing, but I've taken it and I've, you know, taken that, turned it into something positive, and I use it to drive my business forward. And I've realized, you know, pressure is the most dynamic tool that can make things happen. Pressure can make a building fall down, but it can also make the most beautiful things in the world, which is diamonds. So without pressure, I wouldn't have the business that I have. Without pressure, I wouldn't be generating the income that I have. So for me, I take it as a positive. Listen, if you wake up and there's no pressure on you, that means no one's expecting anything from you. That means you have no clients. That means there's no developers calling you. That means you're not doing a good job. So for me, pressure is actually an indicator that I'm doing something right. And I stay motivated because I have the ultimate goal that, like, you know, while you're still relatively young, I want to work hard. I want to achieve a lot for myself. I know that I won't be able to have this sort of energy, like, 15 years from now, maybe 20 years from now. So there's a small window in our lives where we can work this hard. That keeps me very motivated. And more than that, I've been able to use my success as a channel to do things that I really love, which is like saving animals, doing charity work, hosting other events that I wouldn't be able to do. Because when you're not successful, you're thinking about, how can I pay my rent? How can I pay my larger cell phone bill? And you're so focused on yourself because, you know, when you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the first thing is shelter and food and things like that. But once you've reached all of that, it's about like self-actualization and what do I actually enjoy now and what really brings me and fulfills my happiness. So like I've luckily been able to reach that path where I'm like, now for me, it's saving animals and I do that on a consistent basis and like help the world.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about your animals. You did something last couple of weeks. You went overseas and you're giving shots to dogs. Yeah. Can you explain that a little bit? Yeah.
So the way that I got into that was like, you know, I actually had zero social media till 2020.
Oh, so just recently you got.
So it was like 4 years ago. And I feel like, you know, when you don't have social media, you're kind of like in your own little bubble. Like, you know, I would wake up, I would do my work, I would hang out with like the same friends that I had, and it's a very tight little bubble that I was living in, and I was like oblivious to what's actually going on in the world, so to speak, and it was all about like me and my success and my network. When I got social media, I started to realize like what is actually going on in the world, and every time I opened my Instagram, I follow an account called PETA, you know, and I was like, there's a lot of cruelty happening towards animals. I've always loved animals, but I didn't understand the amount of cruelty that was happening in the farming industry, in the fur industry, and that these animals are not only being tortured at death, but they're being tortured since they were born and the conditions that they're living in. And once my mind became, you know, internalized to the actual process, I'm like, how can I help the world? And while I can go save every single cow out there, like I was like, how can I do my part and how can I make an impact? And I realized that what I can do is help dogs. So I travel a lot. I've been going to Mexico a lot, and I built up a few friends there who are also saving dogs, who became kind of like my partners there. And I did a spay and neuter clinic. This was my second one, and I did one the year before as well. And we do about 120 to 130 dogs a year. So I did all the fundraising for that. And I realized this is a way that I can make a small impact. I didn't even understand like why spay and neuter was so important until I actually went there and understood the fact that there's 18 million street animals. You know, when you look at them, they're like, they have skin disease, they have fleas and ticks, their blood is thinning, they're getting cancers. They're living in really horrendous conditions. And if you don't spay and neuter these animals, they're having two litters a year of six puppies each. When the puppies reach 7-8 months, they start reproducing. So one female dog and her offspring can produce 67,000 puppies in 6 years. So it adds up very, very fast. So I thought, how can I make, as a one-man show, like a small impact on the community? So spay and neuter was like the best avenue for me. So I've been doing that now every year. And I'm also bringing back animals from Mexico and trying to find them.
You bring them back here too?
Well, not all of them, but like in the past 2 years, I've done about 17 dogs and cats that I've brought back and found homes for. And then the spay and neuter clinic is now going to become a yearly thing. So I've already done two successfully. And, you know, it's a lot of coordination trying to put on an event in another country, especially where you don't speak the language. Like I had to have like a translator who can like talk to like vendors and so forth. And there were so many small things to organize, like getting the space, organizing vets, organizing medicines. You can't even buy nail clippers in those villages for dogs. Like, the things that we think are so normal here, they don't even have available there. Like when I said, oh, what do you guys need? And they're like, can you bring collars and leashes and surgical bands? They don't even have access to that stuff there. And, you know, here you go, every single store, you can buy that very cheaply. Yeah. So like a nail clipper, just to give an example for dogs, is $38 there. It's like $4 here. So there's a big difference. Crazy. So, you know, just on all the logistics of like things we didn't think of. We rented a school. The day of the event, there was a big flood. Now we had to organize tents and so forth. So it's a lot of coordination that goes in. But after the first year, I learned from that. And I was able to make the second one a lot smoother. And I think every year that I do it, it's going to like get better and better and get bigger and bigger, hopefully.
My main question is, when do you have time to sleep? This is like...
it's very hard. I mean, listen, it's definitely tiring to fit all of that in. But like, my passion is, you know, animals and rescue and so forth. And I know that to be successful at that, I have to be successful at my job. And and how I can relate that to you guys is that, for example, the first year, everybody who donated to my fundraiser to pay for the event were developers. Because they know that they need me for sales.
Yeah.
So can I utilize that relationship? Like, what are they going to say? Oh, sorry, we don't want to help you, but come sell the next project.
Yeah, it's true.
You know? So if I wasn't successful, I can't even reach out to those people. I have no power. Like, they're like, who are you? Like, I don't need to help you. But when you reach success and you build those relationships and they know that, you know, you're going to help them in the future with projects and so forth, they're going to help you now. So I realized that very quickly that, like, success here helps me here.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Incredible that you do all that stuff.
Thank you.
Yes.
You have room for any cats and dogs?
I have two dogs.
Oh, you do?
Well, my wife does, yeah. Well, wait, one passed away. She has one more.
I see.
Yeah. But
yeah, so one of the dogs that I brought back, I ended up just keeping him. His name is Pablo. So I just got him in May. So now I have like three rescue animals.
That's incredible.
How many animals you have in total? You have
three.
All dogs or?
Two cats and one dog.
Amazing.
I love them. Yeah.
Amazing. Just to touch on pre-construction, mm-hmm. if you don't mind, just for those viewers that might not be too familiar with how the process works, maybe they haven't invested in pre-construction before. Mm-hmm. So how does pre-construction work? Like, how's the process?
So pre-construction is very different from resale, because in resale, you can go from house to house, you can go to open houses yourself, or you can book showings with your realtor, and you can actually see what you're purchasing. With pre-construction, there's no building built. You're essentially buying off floor plans, and all you have is really the brochures and a vision. So it's a very different process. Now, some of the builders have nice showrooms with a model suite, so to speak, but it's just to give you an idea. So you really have to be okay with the fact that, like, you know, you're working with a builder that's going to be able to bring the vision that you see on paper to life. The most important thing is the process of pre-construction is also different. You have the APS is very different. So in resale, it's 5 to 6 pages. It's typed up by your realtor. In pre-con, the agreement of purchase and sale is written by the builder's lawyer. It's about 100 pages long. Most of the builders are now using the same standard contracts amongst all their sites. But it is like very overwhelming for a new buyer to like be handed this agreement and, you know, now it's DocuSign, but before they would like literally initial every single page and they're there for like hours and it seems like a lot. So that's the first thing. The APS is very different. The closing dates are very different. Resale, you have 30, 60, 90 days, maybe 120 days. In pre-con, it can be anywhere from 3 years up to like 8 years. So depending on the site, so you have to be okay with the closing date and what it's going to be. The closing date can also move many times. So in resale, it's pretty much set in stone. Okay, you're going to close your house on July the 10th. In pre-con, they might say, okay, your condo's ready July 2027. And then 6 months before, you'll get a letter saying, oh, it's now delayed till July 2028. So I would say closing dates are a lot more fluid and they move a little bit more. Deposit structures are different. Now there's projects that are, you know, they have as low as 10%, 15%. The standard used to be 20, but now in this market, there's a lot of incentives being offered. So depending on the site, you're going to be able to see your deposit structure vary a lot. So closing day incentives are completely different. In resale, the price you get is the price, and then you just close. Mm-hmm. With pre-con, a lot of incentives are being offered. For example, right now, one of the builders is offering 8% interest on your deposits. So till it's built, you're getting 8%. It's like greater than anything you can get even by putting your money in a bank. Yeah. So it's automatically making you money because a lot of people are now scared, oh, what if the market doesn't go up? I've parked all my money. So this is like an incentive that they're offering. You might have other incentives like rental guarantee on the unit that you buy. So they'll guarantee that after closing, if you can't find a tenant, they're going to still pay you, let's say $2,400 a month or $2,800 a month or whatever it is. So incentives like that are completely different. Again, they differentiate depending on the project. You also have what's called a 10-day cooling period by law. So in a hot market, in resale, I mean, in a normal market, like now you put financing conditions, status certificate, and so forth. But in 2021, in a hot market, like if there's 15 other offers, you have to go firm, you know, if you really want to win that bidding war. In pre-con, even if you buy in the hottest site, by law, you have 10-day cooling period in which you can do your due diligence and make sure that it's something that you actually, you know, are comfortable with and okay with.
In that 10-day cooling period, what are the due diligence that would have to happen?
So you would basically go, what we do, I'll tell you what we do. Yeah. So we set up a Zoom with our client and we go through the entire APS with them. We make sure that the incentives that the builder is offering are actually in the contract. We show them where those incentives are. A lot of times, you know, the buyers are going to take that agreement and they're going to read it and they'll be like, oh, it said that the deposit structure would be this, but we have this. And you have to show them that, no, there's an amendment at the end of it that states and so forth. After we do our due diligence, we also recommend them to go to a lawyer. Let's say there's something that's not capped and we want to request that from the developer. That's something that their lawyer can help them with. But we can do like a quick initial review just to make sure that they have all the ducks in a row. Then we refer them to a pre-con lawyer because that's very important in pre-construction. You don't go to your resale lawyer. They're going to kill the deal because they don't even know what they're looking at and what to ask for, what's normal and what's not. So we really recommend everybody to use, if they don't already have a pre-construction lawyer, to use somebody that we can refer to them. And then they also need, depending on the site, a pre-approval. So some projects right now are saying no approval, in which case you don't even have to think about it.
Yeah.
Some say they need a pre-approval. And then some builders, such as Tridel and Daniel, are probably the only two that are requesting that right now, want a firm approval. So depending on the site, we have to like meet those obligations as well. And then within the 10 days, listen, on day 9, if you know, you wake up and your heart is beating too fast, you can cancel. There's no penalty. Nothing gets deposited till the 10th day.
Oh, so okay. You just give your initial whatever it is.
You give the initial deposit and it stays in the file until the 10th day. Okay. And then after that, they'll send that deposit to the builder's lawyer. Otherwise, it's just sitting in the sales office. You can go back on day 9 and go pick it up. There's no like penalty to cancel or cancellation fee or anything like that.
Yes.
The other difference is the Tarion warranty. So all new builds come with Tarion warranty, which is really great because for the first year, you're protected against workmanship defects. So like if your appliances are not working or your dishwasher stops working and so forth, everything is covered. For the first 2 years, you have like HVAC, windows, and what else do you have? Electrical, plumbing. And then for 7 years, you have structural. Structural is more for homes, not condos, but it's still good to have.
Still,
so it's good to know that like you're buying into something which is like you're fully covered. You don't have to think about repairs. You know that you're not going to have to like pay out of pocket for anything because Tarion warranty really protects you. That's another great advantage of pre-con. Yeah.
What sort of advice would you be able to give those out there who are maybe on the not on the fence, but who haven't purchased before and are trying to find that right pre-construction home?
So the first thing is you have to figure out, are you looking for yourself or are you going to be looking to invest? Because those are two very, very different things. So I'll give the example of myself. I love being on a high floor with a great view. I live in downtown Toronto and I'm on the 46th floor. Before that, I was in the 53rd floor. That's what I like. However, that's me as an end user, because in pre-construction, the higher you are, or depending on the exposure, the prices for the exact same floor plan can vary a lot, 60,000, 80,000, sometimes even 100,000. If you want a water view versus like a non-water view, there could be a 100K difference. So you have to first think about, are you going to live in it? And is this something that you really want? Because everybody wants a nice view and a high floor, but is it worth it in terms of price? If you're an end user, maybe, because you're like, I'm going to spend the next 7 years of my life working from home, stuck in here 10 hours a day. I want a nice view. That's different. But if you're an investor, are you going to get more rent from the tenant just because you have a nice view? You might get $100 more. It's definitely not covering that extra 100K mortgage that you now have to take on. Tenants don't care. They just want to be in a good location, a nice floor plan, and something that's convenient. They're going to be there for like a year. So I don't think that it makes sense to buy the top of the building with the nicest view when you're an investor, but that could work for you as an end user. So that's the first thing. Next thing you want to think about, let's say you are an end user and you're buying for yourself, what are your long-term goals? Because what I buy that will work for me today might not work for me in 5 years if I have 3 kids and 2 more dogs. So like if I buy 1 bedroom today and I'm thinking like, okay, in 2027, I'm going to move in there. What's my life going to look like then? And that's what I see the most is like people buy what they think they need today, not what they think they'll need in the future. If you are an investor, you have to think about location. So don't just buy what you're familiar with. Buy something that's going to make you money and that has, you know, the opportunity for growth, upcoming areas that you might be like, I hate that area. I don't want to live there. No problem. But if there's a lot of community improvement coming to that neighborhood and infrastructure development from the government and new transit and so forth, could it make you a lot of money? Yes. So don't always buy what you want to live in and the area that you like. Buy what's going to make you money. Next thing, don't be a day trader, be a decade trader. Meaning you can buy a unit today that's going to close next year and think, I'm going to make 150 grand. And it happened a few years ago. People were buying things in 2020 and a year later the house closed and they made 100 grand and they're like, oh my God, this is going to keep happening for the rest of my life. You can't plan like that because you're going to come into times like now. So really, like, if it goes up that much, great. But you can't buy with that mindset that, like, this is what I'm going to do to put in X amount of deposit to make X return. You have to think of it like, how is it going to transact for a decade if I have to keep it? Because now we're in a down market and we're seeing a lot of, like, desperate sellers who bought in 2021 at the peak of the market. Now their units are coming up for occupancy and they're like, oh my God, I can't afford, like, 5% interest rates, 6% interest rates, and the prices have gone down and I overpaid. You have, like, my advice to those people right now is you got to just close and, like, really just wait it out. Do I think that real estate is going to go back up in, like, a year or two? I believe so. Like, I don't think we're going to be in this situation forever. Are we going to be in it this year? 100%. So that's why my suggestion is, like, always think of real estate as a long-term thing. Because if you look at the history of real estate, over the every 10 years, it doubles. That's been what we've been seeing for the past 50 years. You can't say, what is it going to be in May 2025? Nobody has a crystal ball and can give you that answer. But could you say that, okay, now it's 2024. In 2034, if I bought something for 500, it could be like 800, 900? Yes. So think of it as more of a long-term plan.
It's a long-term plan. Thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true.
And then the other thing is it's very important to buy with a platinum agent who knows what they're doing.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, because a lot of people say, oh, my brother's a realtor, my mother's a realtor, my father's a realtor, I'm just going to buy through them. But if they're not, like, well-versed with, like, what projects are going out in the city, where are the best deals actually happening, they're not going to be able to give you that best advice to really help you make the most bang for your buck. So what we specialize in is pre-construction. So when somebody comes to us and they tell us their needs, we're able to match them very well into a project that suits their needs, whether they're an end user or if they're an investor. And, you know, depending on the closing dates they're looking for, what kind of, like, risk tolerance do they have? You know, some people might say, I don't want to buy in Hamilton. Like, I don't like how it looks right now. And you're trying to show them that vision that in 10 years is going to be completely different. But they're like, no, no, no. And it freaks them out. Then we know, okay, maybe we put them into, like, something like Hyde Park, which is already established. And the rents there already established. The tenant profile established. You might be paying more, but it makes them feel more comfortable. So we can suggest projects depending on their needs. You know, more than a resale realtor who might not have the know-how of what's even available out there, where are the best incentives being offered. Because the other thing is platinum agents actually get different incentives than other agents.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna.
Yeah.
You have different pool of condos as well.
Yes, we have different units available, sometimes different floors, sometimes even different pricing. Like in the first round of pricing is usually the cheapest. And then what the developer does is every few weeks or months, they keep doing price increases. But when new agents come in, they don't even know that the price has already gone up. So when you buy with a platinum agent, you kind of know that you're getting in the first round of inventory and that they're able to get you the best incentives and they know what to look out for. One of the big mistakes that people make is buying directly with the developer. They call, you know, our website and they say, oh, are you the builder? And we're like, no, we're agents. And they're like, oh, we hate agents. We want to work with a builder. And what they don't realize is, like, we're actually working for you, whereas the developer's reps are working for the developer. So when we see the agreement, we know that, okay, the development levies aren't capped, for example. We'll get the lawyer that we're working with to request that so that they're protected on closing. And, like, if the cap is 12,000, they can be charged more than that. The developer's reps who work there are protecting the developer. They're looking to not add any amendments in there that you don't ask for. So if you don't know what you're doing, tough luck. They're like, their job is to protect the developer and they're working for them. So while people have this misconception that I'm going to get a better deal when I work with the builder, it's actually not true.
But the builders won't even give the same incentives as a platinum agent would give as well, right?
They don't give the same incentives a lot of the times. And the incentives are also offered for a very short period sometimes. So it's not like I have the incentives at the building forever. It's like during a 3-week period, a 4-week period. So we're able to make those recommendations to our buyers that right now, this is the best deal on the market. If that incentive is taken away, no problem. You know, you've taken too long of a time, but I have this other product that's really good here.
Okay, yeah. I don't think a lot of people knew that, you know, the developer not looking out for the best interest of the client, right?
Right.
It's actually the real estate agent or the platinum agent that does that.
Yes. And then the other big thing is that when you buy with a developer, a lot of the developer's reps, they move on to other sites. And a lot of the times they leave the industry, they moved on to other marketing companies. So the person that you bought through in 2023 is not even working there in 2028. You can't even find them. When you work with a top team like My Condo Source, am I still going to be in the business in 2028? Yes, you're going to be able to find me. So that's the other thing. Like, you have that peace of mind that, like, I'm working with somebody who's like in the game long term, can help me from start to finish.
Yeah, I think you touched on this a little bit earlier, but how important is it for your business to network?
It's very important to network, obviously. Right now, there's a lot of opportunity to network even more than you've had before, because builders in a hot market didn't host as many events. They didn't have, like, now people are doing lunch and learns and all these information sessions for resale agents to come learn about pre-construction because the market is slower. Those opportunities weren't there. So if you're a resale agent who's looking to add pre-construction to their business, it's a great time, actually, because these events are free to go to. They're open to everybody, whereas before they wouldn't be. There would be one event. It's only open to platinum agents. You know, if you're not a platinum agent, tough luck. Now you can go there, learn about the project, network with the developers, get to know who their reps are, and really, like, learn the ins and outs and then build those relationships. And the real reason that I love networking at these events is meeting other platinum agents. If the importance of meeting other platinum agents is huge, and that's one of the biggest takeaways from these builder trips that I go on, is I'm around by the top minds in the industry. We're always sharing ideas. We're learning from each other. We're making ourselves better. So that really comes into play, because your net worth is your network. So, you know, you spend a whole week with people who are making millions of dollars, it changes the level that you think at. If you spend the week with someone, with your friends who've been making, you know, 60, 70, 100K for the last 5 years, and you're making 120, they're looking at you like, oh my God, you're the shit. You're making 100K. Yeah. I'm making 60. And you're like up here in their world.
Yeah.
But if you're all of a sudden hanging out with people who are making millions, now you're like, oh crap, like, what can I do in my life to, like, elevate myself so I can get closer to the top? So it's really like the energy that you surround yourself with, the people you surround yourself with, in my opinion, really drive, like, the inspiration and the motivation that you were mentioning earlier, and drive you to that success.
Yeah, you're the second person today that told us, surround yourself with the people that you want to be.
Yes, right? 100%.
And I think a lot of people don't understand that, especially in real estate.
Yeah.
That they, from what I was told, is surround yourself with real estate agents. You know, so you have common, you can talk to them, you can bounce ideas off of them, you can get to a next level.
It has to be agents who are successful.
Successful agents is the key word. Yeah.
Agents, like, if you go into, like, our office, like, people, the same people are sitting in the cafeteria all the time talking. I don't even want to talk to anybody. Like, I want to be, like, laser focused, going to my office. I don't need to waste my time. So I'm very, very, like, when you say, like, how do you have time to do all these things? I'm very focused when I go places to get what I need to get done. It's not like a lot of agents will walk in, oh, hey, how are you? How was your weekend? They're spending, like, half an hour talking about their new listing. None of that. Like, I'm like in, out, meeting, boardroom, done.
Yeah, no BS. Yeah, just
no. Great. And that's the only way that I, in my life and where I'm at right now, can stick to the schedule that I have.
No, which is very hard to do, first of all. Yeah. Like, there's very few people who can do that. Like, I have a tough time with my schedule too.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, also, you were talking about platinum agents.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get established as a platinum agent? I know there's X amount of deals you have to do. Are you allowed to share how many deals you have to do or what you have to do to become?
So there's no set number of how many deals you have to do, but I would say it has to be enough to be able to make an impact. I would also say, if you're a new agent looking to get into pre-construction, be strategic. Work with a builder who has a big pipeline versus a builder who's just doing this one project and then they have nothing coming for the next 5 years. Because becoming a platinum agent with that builder is not going to really help you if they have no more inventory coming in the future. So we like to work with, like, the top builders in the industry, like Menkes, Pemberton, Tridel, and so forth, because we know that this project's going to be done and then the next one's coming, the next one's coming. And then they can keep you busy for years. Or go into a master plan community. A really good project right now is Pickering City Center, because they have 10 buildings coming. So you know, even though they're 95% of the sold, number one is sold, phase two is now selling, and then they're going to have all these other towers coming. So if you can become an expert in that neighborhood and know Pickering in and out, they have thousands of units to sell over the next 5 to 6 years. So it would be a very good builder to get into, because right now, while the market's slow, sure, anybody can go in and sell. But if you establish a name for yourself and you know that they're the second fastest growing builder in the GTA, they've had like 10 projects in the last 8 years already, and these guys are going to be able to feed you for years and years and years to come. So not only at Pickering City Center, but across all their other sites. So it's about being strategic about who you want to work with and focus your time and energy on. And then once you get known, then it becomes easier and easier. But to start, figure out, be strategic with which builder you pick.
Which builder you want.
Yeah.
Awesome.
What advice would you give real estate agents who are thinking of getting into pre-construction to sell?
So I think, like I was mentioning before, the best thing to do is attend these developers' events that they're having. If you don't even know where to go or what to do, we're happy to help out and reach out to us at My Condo Source. But when you attend these events, you can really get a good sense of, A, the project, the neighborhood. They'll teach you everything from A to Z. You get to meet all the sales reps. Start learning one neighborhood, one project, taking your clients there. And then also the other big thing is start posting on social media. So I never had this opportunity when I was growing my pre-construction business, because like I said, I didn't even have Instagram till like 2020. But now is a really good time for somebody who's, let's say, just in the resale market. Could you go on and post 4 or 5 new projects in one shot? In a week from now, no one's going to be like, oh, Brandon posted that 5 minutes apart from each other. So take the content on our social media, the renderings, the write-ups, start posting. Show your network that you're now doing pre-construction. You're in the game. When you go to these events, take photos with the builder, tag them, post them. So now your network is thinking, oh, Aleem does pre-construction now, or Brandon does pre-construction now, because what they see is what they think. So start branding yourself as that pre-construction expert. Because what I see a lot is people will say, oh, I made like one video on like this project and I posted it and like nobody responded and nobody bought. You got to just keep consistent with doing it again and again. Do you think that Coca-Cola puts up a billboard and then says, who got off the highway, went straight into a gas station, bought a Coke because they saw that ad? Yeah. It doesn't work like that. You have to brand yourself as the expert, and you have to understand that visibility beats ability. So it's, you have to think about the longevity of doing the same action again and again. So it's a very, very easy way to start having your network think about you and plant that seed in the head that you're the expert, and then become the expert. There's a lot of free information online. If you follow the top 15 agents in the industry and you look through all of their videos, you can get a very good sense of how things work. All the information about how does HST work and how does like closing dates work and so forth, it's available for free on YouTube. So many agents have made videos on that. Yeah. You can educate yourself very, very fast. So go to the builders events, learn the gist of the project, learn the foundations of pre-con through YouTube, or maybe you can join a top team. And, you know, not everybody's like, oh, I don't want to work for somebody. But is it like the best learning that you could have for a year? 100%. It's going to accelerate your growth fivefold, tenfold from what you could on your own. So that's another option. Go to the sales offices. And if you don't know things, it's okay. Just take your client there. The sales teams are there to help you. Brand yourself. And I think the biggest advice that I could give is a lot of the agents, they give up very, very fast because they want success now. You have to think about, like, what do I want for myself in my career long term? But they're like, this didn't work for me. This week I'm going to go, and I've actually had our own agents, like, say, I'm going to go work a construction job for 2 weeks and make some quick money. And they take that quick hit and they give up what's important really, like for their future and their career, to get that easy cash now. And they don't stay focused. They say, we'll do it part-time. We don't want to do it full-time. You have to jump into it full-time and make it your do or die and burn all the boats that are behind you. Because that's the key to success, is really saying, this is what's going to make me successful. Let me put my all into it. The minute that you have like this exit here that's going to make you a dollar, this exit there that might feed you a few $1,000, then you start getting like diverted and you're not focused, and you can be successful unless you're all in. That's what I would say.
No, yeah, that's just, I agree too.
Amazing. So how can viewers get a hold of you?
through our Instagram. Our Instagram and our YouTube is My Condo Source, and we'd love if you guys could follow us.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Real Talk Real Estate. And be sure, please, to follow our Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok.
Yeah, until our next episode.
Thank you. Bye.